AstraZeneca and Oxford say their COVID-19 vaccine is up to 90% effective in late-stage trials, and its technology could make the drug more accessible globally.
So what you could see happen is that rich countries try to buy up as much of these more effective vaccines if they do prove to be more effective over the long term, and poorer countries take the cheaper option.
And former Fed Chair Janet Yellen could become the first woman to lead the Treasury. Plus, why the usual holiday diet and exercise advice is changing. It's Monday, November 23rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. We report that President-elect Joe Biden plans to tap former Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen as the nation's next Treasury Secretary. Our national political reporter Ken Thomas has more details.
If confirmed by the Senate, Yellen would make history as the first woman to lead the Treasury Department. This is a decision that's rooted in the administration's preparations to drive the economic recovery from the turbulence of the coronavirus pandemic. Yellen has been an advocate for more government stimulus and warned that the recovery will be uneven if Congress doesn't spend more to fight unemployment and keep small businesses afloat. She's viewed by the Biden team as someone with a lot of credibility around the world and someone who could work closely with the Fed and the executive branch to engineer more financial support if Congress is hesitant to pass more stimulus. And a key point here, in a divided Congress, Yellen has a track record of receiving Republican support.
Biden also revealed key picks for other posts today, including some officials from the former Obama administration.
Tony Blinken, Biden's longtime foreign policy advisor, has been nominated to be Secretary of State. Biden's tapping Alejandro Mayorkas to lead the Department of Homeland Security. If confirmed, he'd be the first Latino to lead the department. Jake Sullivan, a veteran of the State Department and a longtime Biden aide, will be National Security Advisor. And Biden is turning to Avril Haines, a Deputy National Security Advisor under President Obama, to be the Director of National Intelligence. And lastly, Biden is turning to a familiar face. He's going to make former Secretary of State John Kerry a special presidential envoy for climate change. That's a sign of how important climate change will be for his administration. These are all people who know Joe Biden well. They've worked for him for years, in Blinken's case, for nearly two decades. And it shows how the Biden transition is trying to project competence and experience as he makes his selections. Biden, in his phone calls with world leaders, has been stressing the idea that the U.S. will soon be back, as he puts it, when he takes office. And even as President Trump has disputed the outcome of the election, Biden is trying to move forward with his picks and signal that the U.S. will be returning to a sense of normalcy on the global stage.
Election officials in Michigan have certified President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the state. Republicans had asked for an audit of ballots in Detroit and surrounding Wayne County. Pennsylvania is also moving closer to ratifying Biden's victory. Certifying the vote in the two states would help cement Biden's victory and create new challenges for the Trump legal team and its efforts to overturn the election results. No evidence of widespread fraud has emerged, and federal officials say the 2020 election was conducted fairly and securely. We report exclusively that the White House is considering new action against China, and it wants to create an informal alliance to retaliate when China uses its trading power to coerce other countries. That's according to senior Trump administration officials. Under the plan, if China boycotts imports, allied nations would purchase the goods or provide compensation, or jointly agree to put tariffs on China for lost trade. Officials say even if the measures are approved, they'd need the endorsement of the incoming Biden administration going forward. And General Motors is recalling 5.9 million of their best-selling SUV and pickup trucks models to replace potentially faulty Takata airbag inflators. The fix will cost GM more than $1 billion. The National Highway and Safety Administration says the Takata inflators are prone to deadly explosions that have been reported in other automakers' vehicles. The recall related to Takata airbags has been one of the largest in the U.S., involving 19 automakers and tens of millions of vehicles. Coming up after the break, why AstraZeneca and Oxford's COVID-19 vaccine is different and could be more widely used globally. A third COVID-19 vaccine has shown success in large clinical trials. AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford say their two-dose vaccine has proven as much as 90% effective in preventing the infection without serious side effects, but that the vaccine's efficacy varied widely depending on the dosage. Here now to break that down for us is Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Walker. Hi, Joe. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
So, Joe, tell us more about AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford's results so far regarding their COVID-19 vaccine. There's a range of effectiveness cited here between 62% and 90%. Can you explain what's going on there?
Yeah, so it's a little bit weird, and it kind of makes it a little bit challenging to compare with the some of the earlier vaccine results we'd seen from Pfizer and Moderna. But essentially what happened is they tested two dosing regimens in this trial. And one of them, the first dose was a half dose, followed up by a full dose about a month later. And then in the other group, it was two full doses, separated by about a month. And in the half dose group, the results were a lot better. They looked about 90%, the company said, compared to about 60% in the two full dose group. There's still an open sort of question about how, quote unquote, real the 90% efficacy rate that was seen in this half dose group, because it's a much smaller sample size, a smaller group of patients, and relatively few infections. So, you know, the way that these trials work is you enroll thousands of people, and then you look at the data after a certain number of people have been infected. And in this case, one analyst I was talking to said, because the sample size is so small in this half-dose group, if like five more people had been infected in the vaccine group, you know, the efficacy would have been 70%. And so the results are fragile, meaning that over time, as these patients are tracked more and they get more data, you could see that 90% efficacy go down, perhaps, you know, more to the 60% that they saw in the much larger group.
So a key difference between the vaccine being developed by AstraZeneca and the two others who have reported results, on the one hand Moderna and on the other Pfizer and its partner BioNTech, AstraZeneca is relying on traditional vaccine technology, whereas the others are using mRNA gene technology. What are the benefits to using traditional tech, especially in terms of getting this vaccine out quickly to the public?
The AstraZeneca technology is a bit more traditional. It's not sort of widely used. But the way that they do it is people have a lot more experience making these types of vaccines. They're cheaper to make, arguably easier to make, and not as expensive to make. And so in that sense, the company may be able to produce way more vaccine doses, perhaps 3 billion or more around the globe, perhaps much faster than these newer tech vaccines. The other big difference is that the mRNA technology requires it to be stored at super, super cold levels. It's not as stable as more traditional vaccines, so that means that it can go bad more quickly. And so it's just like a lot more effort and work that goes into actually distributing the vaccines. And that'll be a challenge even in rich countries like the US. But in poorer countries where there's less infrastructure, it could be even more challenging to distribute and adequately vaccinate people.
So you spoke earlier about the distribution and the relative ease of distribution for traditional vaccines. AstraZeneca's is expected to be used more widely in Europe and overseas as opposed to here in the U.S. Why is that?
Well, there's a few reasons, and with the caveat that we really don't know exactly how things will play out. But so far, the AstraZeneca vaccine appears to be maybe a bit less effective than these other vaccines. And it's also much cheaper than the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. And so what you could see happen is that rich countries try to buy up as much of these more effective vaccines if they do prove to be more effective over the long term, and poorer countries take the cheaper option. There's also the fact that supplies of the vaccines will be limited, perhaps for quite a while. And so in the U.S., the government has procured many hundreds of millions of doses, and so that may limit the ability of people outside the U.S. to get some of them. The other thing to consider is that the AstraZeneca vaccine was developed at the University of Oxford. It's sort of a national treasure for the British people in the United Kingdom. It's a point of pride, and you would expect to see that vaccine's pretty widely used over there if it is authorized for use.
And the company also says, and this is another difference between the other vaccine candidates we've heard from, it plans to sell the vaccine without profit during the pandemic, and the shot is expected to cost between $3 and $5. How is AstraZeneca able to do that?
They're able to charge that little because they're not making a profit off of it. Vaccines can be relatively cheap to make, and you see that with how inexpensive common childhood vaccines can be. The reason AstraZeneca agreed to do it was because it was a demand of the Oxford University scientist who invented the vaccine. A big caveat here, though, is that AstraZeneca says it won't make a profit on the vaccine for as long as the pandemic lasts. So there's a chance that it could be a moneymaker for them in the future if the virus gets under control, but people continue to need to get vaccinated.
What is AstraZeneca's timeline now going forward?
They have these trials that are ongoing in the UK. And so there'll be additional data to read out from there. But the company said today that they're going to file for authorization around the world, particularly in the places where these trials went down, such as the UK and Brazil. Here in the U.S., it has a really large clinical trial of about 30,000 people that started in late August. And so that'll take a bit more time to enroll and complete. There's an open question as to whether or not the U.S. would consider approval or authorization of this vaccine based on the trials done outside of the U.S. So the company has said that it will seek authorization in the U.S. based on these data, but that's sort of, as I said, a question mark among some of the analysts.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Walker. Joe, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, turkey stuffing pie. Starting at Thanksgiving, weight loss programs and fitness apps usually start giving advice on how to resist second helpings and dodge those cookie trays. But a number of surveys show that this year, people are really stressed. They're concerned about their overall health, not just their waistlines. Our reporter Ellen Byron says the wellness industry is responding and focusing on self-care this holiday season.
Weight Watchers, now known as WW, launched a new program last week called My WW Plus, and that includes tools that let users more closely track their mindset and their sleep, and that's in addition to the food they're eating and exercise that they're doing. And earlier this year, they started a hydration tracker for users to record how many ounces of water they drink each day. That really helps someone log a win, even if diet and exercise didn't go so well during a week. Maybe they'll have more success tracking their mindset or how well they're sleeping.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.